Well, good evening, everybody. We've got another edition of the Laker Hockey Show live from the Antlers. Good crowd on hand tonight. We really appreciate all these fans who are down here every week joining us. We do not have Chris Sable with us tonight, but he did leave a little note here on some of the things that the Antlers has going on, asked me to pass it on to all of you. He also said, Coach Witten, congratulations on the win Saturday night, so we'll talk about that in just a moment. They do have going on for the holidays. Gift cards are 2-for-1 at the Antlers right now if you're looking for some stocking stuffer type gifts for Christmas. Also, Saturdays coming up, the 12th and the 19th of December will be Santa's Saturdays. And they'll be featuring a brunch there, cookie decorating, pictures with Santa Claus. Bring the kids down. That's on the 12th and the 19th of the month. And it's not too late to book for a holiday party here as yet either. He's got a great price on holiday parties. And speaking of parties, New Year's Eve reservations are being accepted for the prime rib and lobster combo dinners on New Year's Eve at the Antlers. So Chris Sable, a little bit busy tonight. He's got a Sault Michigan Hockey Association board meeting, and he's a member of that board, so he's off taking care of that. Should make mention that late this afternoon, the players of the week were announced in the WCHA. Lakers didn't get anything there. We had one nominee. That was our outstanding goaltender from this past weekend, Gordy Dayfield. However, defensive player of the week went to Mark Friedman, the sophomore defenseman from Bowling Green. He had 2 goals, 2 assists as the Falcons took 2 from Northern Michigan and allowed Northern only 33 shots on goal in 2 games. So Northern didn't create a lot of offense, and Bowling Green took them for 2. Jason Pawlowski is the rookie of the week from Minnesota State. Jason, the goaltender there, he had 2 games, stopped all but 2 of 38 shots on goal, so he's rookie of the week. And Teddy Bluger from Minnesota State, the senior, is the player of the week offensively. He had 5 points in the first period on Saturday night in a 6-2 win over Anchorage. He had 1 goal and 4 assists in 1 period. So not a bad performance. Teddy Bluger's a pretty good hockey player. And Lakers have some pretty good hockey players. They came up with a 3-2 win on Saturday night against Ferris State, ended a 10-game losing streak to the Bulldogs that goes back a number of years. Tough 1-0 loss on Friday night. Coach Witten's with us now, and your assessment of the weekend.
Well, you know, obviously the Saturday comeback puts a happy face on a little bit. And, you know, I think if you look at it, the past weekend and you go back, like the last 10 games, I think 8 or 9 of the last 10 games have either been ties or 1-goal games. So we're in every game lately, which is it's a positive thing. I think our team defense and the way we're playing in net, and again, team defense is where we thought it might be to start the year, and it wasn't early on. So we're doing a much better job of you know, stopping pucks and limiting the other team's offense, which is giving us a chance to win every night. So that's been good. Another strong weekend from Gordy Dayfield, certainly. And you know, I think one thing maybe hasn't been mentioned a whole lot too is the penalty kill. The penalty kill, I think, is up to 2nd in the league. It's at 84% in WCHA play. You know, the guys have done a really good job. And I think especially Saturday night, Mitch Holtz is one of our top centermen, one of our top penalty killers. Gage Terrell, another one of our top penalty killers. Those two are really our top pair typically, and they're both out of the lineup with an injury and a suspension. And I thought a huge response from our team to kill off every power play that they had on Saturday night and all weekend. So it was a really good job by the special teams on the penalty kill side of things.
Yeah, that was to be something we bring up here early in the show tonight. Penalty kill's been outstanding. Power play got a goal on Saturday night, and that certainly helped. A huge goal, as a matter of fact, because it made it a 2-1 game when Al Globke scored 24 seconds into the third period on Saturday.
Yeah, and sometimes it's, you know, that momentum and timing of it. You know, we came out, we had the power play to start, and then a huge goal on the rush there. We had a really good job, guys going to the net and then finding that second puck. We've talked so much about being heavy and urgent around the net, and that was a good example of it. And, you know, certainly Saturday night, that third period, that was the best we've done offensively, of getting to those areas, getting pucks to the net front and creating some second chances. So that was a huge goal momentum-wise and power play. And, you know, it's tough, too. And the 5-on-3, I know people were groaning about that a little bit. And but, again, you lose Mitch and Gage, and those are 2 pieces on your power plays. All of a sudden, everybody's in a different role and a different setup. And I thought that led to a little bit of our, you know, communication breakdown and execution breakdown. And we were kind of setting up the look we wanted in that 5-on-3. But, you know, we win the special teams battle Saturday night, and we come out even on Friday night. So, an overall, a strong weekend for the special teams.
Yeah, defensively, it was a great weekend. You lose 1-0 nothing. That's tough. We didn't do anything much offensively on Friday night, but for two periods we were shut out on a Saturday, although we were doing some things an awful lot better. I thought they played with way more urgency and intensity. The passing game was much better on Saturday night throughout the game. And Doug Holava kind of was a prophet there. After the second period, he did the assistant coach interview right at the end of the period, and he said, hey, if we can get a goal here, we're going to score two or three on this guy. There's no doubt in my mind. And that proved to be prophetic because that's exactly what happened. How about Pete Spratty? Gets his first career goal in 34 career games, ties the game at two, and then Owen Hedrick, the youngest player on the Laker team, scores the game winner with 4 minutes left.
Well, you know, and I thought we generated a ton of offense early. You know, probably our highest grade A output of the season. I thought Darren Smith was really, really good early on, really good through the whole game. But we had, I think, three breakaways in the game. We had that great 3-on-2 rush where we hit it over to Nellis, and he made the big blocker save on Nellis late in the second period. And, you know, that would have been a ton of momentum going into that break. But, again, that big goal for the momentum, I thought Smith was really good. You know, it's great that Gordy – and that was a big goal. And, you know, Owen Hedrick's goal, another thing of beauty from the D there, just a seeing eye puck that got through traffic and made it into the net. And, you know, a huge goal to get that from our D and through the traffic.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good effort all the way around by Lake Superior on Saturday night. Just a lot different game than what we saw on Friday night. And Eddie Bishop, our sports information director, has provided some stats for us here, too. Gordy Dayfield's been really good lately. He was very good on the weekend again. He stopped all but 39 shots on the weekend. And he has raised his game during this month, as Eddie says. He's got a league-best .956 save percentage and a goals against average of 1.52. Those are outstanding stats. And on top of that, he's faced a league-high 250 shots during that time. So,
you know, he's been on fire. You know, he's going back to that Bowling Green. And, you know, again, that's, you know, that was our hope coming into the year, the level we knew Gordy could play at and we wanted him at. It took him a little bit longer to get there than I'm sure he wanted, and certainly we wanted as well. But, you know, you get numbers like that, you get goaltending like that, you have a chance every night. And so that's huge. It's important for our team for sure. And, you know, we asked Gordy to come here tonight. We asked Globke to come here tonight. We asked Brady to come here tonight. So we had all these great players to come talk to everybody, but they all have class. So, you know, those guys are working hard that way, and it's a tough time of the year, as we all know, as you're coming into finals. But Gordy's been tremendous in this month, and we need him to finish it these next 2 weeks going into a new month.
Yeah, it's been good. It was 67 of 70 shots last weekend. This guy's been pretty outstanding for us in the recent games. Certainly has taken over there. I think we will definitely see Nick Kossoff this season, but for a while, Gordy's kind of got that one to run with. One of the things that was maybe a little bit of a shortcoming on Friday night that we should probably talk about is it was the third straight game, whether we agree with the call or not, and we can talk about that. It was the third straight game in which the Lakers have taken a major penalty.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, obviously the blindside hit is a point of emphasis, and I don't know if you'd call it a blindside. You know, Chad was cutting across, you know, I mean, we hope Chad's well. I know Chad well. He grew up here. He was in the East Lansing area and, you know, a good hockey player, an important piece of that team. And, you know, for Mitch Holtz, you know, I thought he let up. I didn't think he targeted the head. So it's hard for you to tell your players, you know, what they're supposed to do in that situation. Their whole life they've been told to go through bodies and finish checks. You know, the injury did not come from the initial contact. When Chad went down, his head struck the ice. And, you know, it's scary, and you never want to see that for another player. And at the same time, you want your players to, you know, to play through bodies and to play hard. And I thought, you know, Mitch is a strong, strong kid. And we had actually, you know, one of Doug's former colleagues with the Islanders texted right away after the game and said, you know, hey, that's a great hockey play. And, you know, those guys are licking their lips at a big, strong play like that. So certainly unfortunate on Chad's behalf, but I thought it was a good play by Mitch. He wasn't trying to injure. You know, that's not the way we play, and that's not our intent. But we do want to cut down our penalties. You know, we're way too high. You know, our penalty kill has been good, and that, you know, maybe helps you out a little bit to make sure you can kill them, but we've got to cut down our penalties for sure.
I thought also a couple of really good plays on Saturday night's game defensively. Not that he doesn't make them all the time, because he's a pretty good defensive forward, but Gus Coriale kind of saved the day a couple of times late in that game on Saturday night. at least twice in the third period, he pulled a puck out of our crease and got it out of the zone.
Yeah, he was in great spot. You know, and we talk a lot about playing 200-foot game and make sure we're sprinting back to our spots in the D zone, and Gus was certainly in that situation. I think his game the last 2-3 weeks has been outstanding. He's playing with energy, pace. He's one of those key penalty killers. Him and Diego are kind of in our second penalty kill unit, or top two penalty kill units, depending on, you know, what side of the ice it's starting on and what faceoff guy's hot. So Gus has elevated his game. He set up Globke's goal, and he's just playing at another pace and level, and he's been outstanding for us, you know, not only on the offensive side with what he's doing, but as you mentioned, those defensive plays and his awareness.
I think our strength on the blue line is starting to show a bit too. That's been a concern this season, not playing too well defensively from time to time, but those combinations have stayed the same. They're starting to get comfortable with each other. Wright and Chatham, Roll and Hedrick and Spratty McArdle, they're all doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, you know, and part of that, Eric Traplix is still out with injury, as we talked about off the air there, and so those pairs have kind of solidified. You know, Ryan Renz is sitting out there. He's played a lot of hockey for us last year, and we know he's capable of playing, but, you know, the way we've played with our team defense and limiting goals against and, you know, not much five-on-five, we've been very good that way. So a lot of credit to the guys who are in there. They've got a lot of chemistry right now. They're playing well. I'd still like us to clean up our zone exits at time. You know, we're on our guys on our breakouts to continue to sharpen that up and manage pucks a little bit better at times in the breakout. It's not just D, it's a team situation, but they've done a good job. And like I said, there is chemistry. There's a lot of comfort level right now with each pairing. We're not overly concerned about matchups on the back end in terms of getting a certain D pairing against the top line. You know, obviously I think you always try to put guys in situations to be successful, but we're pretty comfortable with what's going on right now. And I think you can see the comfort level between pairings really been elevated the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think they're really getting to know each other. I think Spratty McArdle in particular, Matt's really improved his game. I thought he was really good. They reversed the puck real effectively on Saturday night to each other, got it out a number of times, and I've been pretty impressed with how much better we've been playing in that area of the game. Also, faceoffs. We dominated. We won more than we lost on the weekend in both games.
Well, Friday we were phenomenal. We were 67%, you know, and that's tremendous. We have a goal every night of being 55% or better, and also not giving us up any faceoff goals, which did cost us on that Saturday there. You know, 67% is unheard of, and then it dipped. On Saturday night, you know, Mitch Holtz losing him was part of that reason, because he does take a lot of key faceoffs for us. But we've been better. It seems like Friday night we're really strong, and then they make some adjustments or we let off the pedal a little bit, and the other teams have come back a little bit on Saturday nights. But it's such a key area of the game, you know, 60 to 80 faceoffs per game, where you get control of the puck and get into some set movement and some structure. So it's been a strength for us a lot of nights, and Friday again was outstanding.
Yeah, and Owen Hedrick, we've talked about him a bit. He had the game winner on Saturday night. He has 3 goals now. He has 5 points. That's the most goals by a freshman defenseman in the league, and it's the tied, I believe, for the most points among defensemen, first-year players.
Yeah, and you know, talking about his game, I think his comfort level, you know, he was a guy, because of his age, because of where he was coming from, we were very protective early on in terms of the matchups and the situations we put Owen in, and game by game, and certainly over the last few weeks, you know, we're not quite as concerned. He's done a very good job of adjusting to the level. You see him now in much more difficult situations, key D-zone faceoffs, more penalty kill time, certainly any key offensive zone faceoffs. He's a guy that we think is very good at the offensive blue line. He showed that with the game-winning goal. So he's done a very good job adjusting. He's much more comfortable and doing a really good job. I mean, there's still areas certainly for anybody and any freshman to continue to adjust and grow. But that value at the offensive blue line is so important to us and to any team. And he's done a very good job that way. And I liked his puck protection this weekend. I thought on breakouts, he was able to absorb some hits. He's getting used to the strength and the size of the guys he's playing against. So he could protect some pucks and get his feet moving and maintain possession by moving it to our forwards.
Yeah, it's tough when you're 18 years old, just turned 18, as a matter of fact. You're up against some 23, 24-year-olds. We're going to talk about ages, too, during this show tonight, the Big Ten proposal that's coming up. We'll get into that, among other things, and the Alaska trip that's coming up, too. Want to remind everybody, we do not have a show scheduled for December 21st or the 28th. Also, there'll be a no Laker Hockey Talk program on the 23rd or the 30th. We'll be back with this show on January the 4th and with the Hockey Talk program on Wednesday mornings on January the 6th. But we still do have shows the next two Mondays here in the month of December. We're going to take our first break of the night. We'll be right back with more on the Laker Hockey Show on ESPN 1400. All righty, we're back at the Antlers on a Monday night. Lakers coming off a split at home against a very good Ferris State team. And that's one thing we really haven't talked too much about, although you and I did pregame both nights, Damon. This is a good team, Ferris State. They're very quick. They're mobile defensively. And you pointed out that they like to recruit the smaller guys who can really skate to play defense. And they're pretty tough, too. I think Brandon Anselmini's about as gregarious a guy as you're going to find on the checking end of the game too, and he can skate.
And I thought Dorer played with a lot of bite and edge to his game on the back end. You know, and we talked about that today as a team. I was really pleased, and we were really pleased with how much offense we generated against a decor that's so mobile. Obviously, it's an area we're trying to continue to improve upon as our skating ability and in our ability to win foot races and things like that. So, and to be able to do it against a team and a decor that skates that way, I thought that was really positive for us. And, you know, again, with some adversity in terms of suspensions and injuries, you know, there's some pieces missing that are pretty key guys for us. So it was good. It was really good. And if we can continue with that offensive effort, getting the goaltending we're good, getting the team D we're playing, we're going to be in a really good spot coming into the break.
Yeah, one of the questions we got a number of questions from fans here with us tonight, and one of them is kind of hitting on the subject I was going to ask you about anyway, and the way they put it's pretty interesting. What was the difference in the dressing room between the second and third periods on Saturday night that sparked all the energy early in the third?
You know, I'll start by saying our locker room energy is really good. You know, focus, energy, whatever you want to call it. Josh Nenendahl is a guy that you always hear. There is each team's a little bit different in terms of how they're composed. And, you know, it felt like last year, you know, you as a coach, you're trying to go in there and get guys awake and fired up. And maybe, you know, it got exaggerated as the season went on and the difficulties. But, you know, it's just a different feel this year. There's more life. There's more energy. Again, Nenendahl's a guy you always notice. You know, Austin McKay, our seniors are doing a very good job of having positive communication and making sure guys are prepared to play. So it's good that way. It's healthy that way. It's not kind of false or, you know, misleading. It's a legit energy and excitement and a willingness to know we have to go work and compete. So that's been good overall. You know, I think as a staff, we just talked about with our players, we talk a lot about we don't have to put a show on at home. You know, sometimes you come to your home arena and you want to play this cute game, this skill game, and entertain your home fans. And all year long, we've been saying, you know, hey, we're not here to put on a show. We're here to win a hockey game. And it really hasn't translated. And so we kind of change our message that, you know what, we are here to put on a show, but it's a show about hard work and competing and giving our fans what they deserve to see, what we show on the road a lot. So maybe that had a little piece to do with it. I don't know. But we do have a good group in there that has the energy. You know, Nenendahl's a captain, come from winning program again, mentioning McKay and Johnny Schmitty, those guys are doing a good job. So they've got the life and the energy in there, and I'm not sure why it's taken so long at home, but hopefully that's the springboard in the team you see that we've seen so much more on the road.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt though that this is a better hockey team at this point this season than it was last year at the same point. I think we won two games in the first half of the season all told last season, and yeah, things are looking up. This is a team that kind of funny. On Friday night, I thought we made I couldn't figure out what we were trying to do with all the drop passes and the little goofy stuff going on, trying to move the puck into the offensive zone. And then on Saturday night, it was just a case of let's go get them. Let's skate. Let's fly. I thought Matt Johnson was really good Saturday night.
Yeah, playing with speed and toughness. And, you know, we try to talk about playing north and underhandling pucks, especially in our neutral zone. You know, we don't want to go D to D and back across and the drop passes. We had 18 turnovers on Friday night that we charted, and that's way too much. We dropped that down to 10 turnovers on Saturday. Certainly there's going to be points in the game where you want to use skill and try to make skill plays and use your talent and ability to do that, and we'll take some of those, but you've got to know when to do them and when to make the proper decisions. But on Friday night, I thought we were extremely soft skill. We tried to go backhand saucer passes through the middle and, you know, not make them go back and pivot for pucks. So we got that out of our game and then clean that up from Friday to Saturday, and that's got to be our game. You know, we're not a high-powered offensive skilled team. You know, we want to continue to play with more talent and skill and keep working on that, but there's got to be a structure and a mental toughness and discipline in place to play the right way, and I thought for the most part on Saturday we got that.
Now, the big question here, in fact, two of the seven questions we've got from fans tonight to deal with this subject, and let's get into it right now and talk about it for the second segment here. That the Big Ten rule proposal right now, this is all over the internet. It's a big deal with the media as well. There are a lot of stories about it. The Big Ten evidently has made a proposal to the NCAA about changing the age for eligibility from the age of 21 for freshmen to 20 or 2 years out of high school, whichever comes first. This is going to have a major impact, I would think, on some of the smaller schools, the schools like Lake Superior, Northern Michigan, Michigan Tech, Quinnipiac, Mercyhurst, Huntsville. These schools rely an awful lot on getting some older kids who can compete with all this high-end USA National Development Team program type player and the USA or the USHL players that the Michigan and Michigan States and BC and Minnesota and these teams get. So it's a real interesting thing right now. I don't know that it's going to happen, but it is going to go to the NCAA. There's something, one report I saw said it's going to be decided probably by April. I would think they'd decide this at the national convention in January myself, but I don't understand why they say April. But it's something. In fact, one of the fans here tonight asked, is there anything we can do? Can we write letters or have a campaign? Can we let the NCAA know that we don't like this idea?
Well, it's too late, I think, at that point. Tonight's, as coaches in the league, it's due tonight. I think the discussion period or whatever they have is over, ending tonight, or has to be in. So, so I think it's out of our hands that way. It's out of the NCAA coaches' hands because it was never brought up. The Big Ten kind of backdoored it and didn't bring it up to the coaching body, where overwhelmingly 49-11 coaches in college hockey are against the proposed legislation, or roughly those numbers. If you haven't read the College Hockey News piece, I wish I had it up because I would quote Walt Kyle's quotes in it. Walt was very outspoken of it. And I think we all feel that way. It's, they don't like it. They should win hockey games. They've got a lot of ability to recruit and, budgets and facilities and things like that to go get these players. Then they should do a better job. They should not try to change the rules to tilt the playing scale more in their favor. So it's really short-sighted. It's really selfish. Nobody's for it. But you know what? It's going to be interesting to see if it passes. It goes to, beyond the coach's hands. It's now you've got some of the athletic directors and a lot of non-hockey schools involved that, they might look at it and say, yeah, there's not a lot of sports that have it that way. So it's going to be interesting. And, I think part of your point, you look at our graduation rates in hockey, they're the highest of any NCAA sport. I think they're about 7 percentage points higher than the next highest sport. The amount of players we're developing for the NHL is higher than ever. So there's so many good things going on in college hockey. And now the Big Ten comes in because they're not having the success they want and try to backdoor a rule. It's not right. And, obviously the body's overwhelmingly against it. And it'd be terrible if it goes through.
Well, it'd be tough for a school like Lake Superior. I counted out our guys, did it roughly today, and I may have missed somebody somewhere. But I looked at all the birth dates and I know when they all started. 17 of our players started at the age of 21. And we're going to lose if we lost half of those, we'd lose 8 guys roughly from that crew if we had to just get 20-year-olds. Either that or we can't be letting guys play that extra year of junior to get a little bit better and then bring them in at 21. We'd have to bring them at 20, like, say, a Diego Cuglietta who was in here this year at age 20.
Well, it'd shift back, and, we'd all adjust, and it wouldn't change all that much. And, when you look at a guy like Owen Hedrick, he's a true freshman, and, it can be done. And we talk about being over-ready. If we feel like our recruit's over-ready, whether a true freshman, 19, whatever it is, then we'll bring them in and hopefully help them develop and be a piece of what we're trying to do. But that's not their intent. I mean, we all know what their intent is. And you look at their records and what happened this weekend, once again, they're not where they want to be. And I think the other really nice thing Walt said about it is not only, are they trying to change this rule to help out their they're winning and whatever they're trying to do, but you also can't get them to come up and play us. They want 4 home games for 2 games or not. We can't get Wisconsin to return a trip up here. What more do they possibly want? They're also trying to push through NCAA regionals only on host home sites again, and you have to have a certain building capacity to have it, or enough hotels in your city. I mean, what more do you guys want? You have the facilities, you have the budgets, get it done. And it's so probably enough said there. And but read the College Hockey News piece. Walt Kyle had some great quotes on it as well. And that mirrors what most of the body feels about the legislation.
Do they pay a guarantee when we play them? Like when we played two games at Michigan State, did we get some money out of that?
Some do, some don't. It depends on your negotiation. And I could say a lot more, Bill, but I'll probably leave it at that. You know, we have some good relationships with some of those schools, and some you feel like you should, you maybe don't, but some schools are good about it. And, you know, and I get it. They've got bills they're trying to pay and things they're trying to do, and it's different everywhere. But, you know, they've got some things that we don't have, certainly in terms of some of their enrollment and budget and Big Ten football generating millions and millions of dollars for your department and your revenue. So, I hope it doesn't go through. And again, the college hockey coaching overwhelmingly opposes it, and hopefully that's enough to not allow this legislation to get through.
Yeah, there's a little quibble out there too about Arizona State opposes it. At least they say they do at this point, and they're the Division One. Only Division One schools can vote on this. Lake Superior State has no say in it. Neither does Northern Michigan or Michigan Tech or any of the smaller schools. It's a D1 issue only. It'll come before them in January at the NCAA convention. And the big problem I see with it is most of those people are ADs and presidents and other administrators who look at things from the high school perspective. They're football, basketball type people for the most part. They think that your athletes should come right out of high school and play. They can't understand the hockey game at all. And hockey, as we all know, is precipitated by what happens in junior hockey. We get our players from the junior ranks, and a lot of these young men have been out of high school for a couple of years before they'll come and play. Not so much so at Minnesota, Michigan State, and Michigan. They're getting these young guys right out of the right out of Plymouth, Michigan these days and putting them right in there. And they don't like the way things are going. Those young guys aren't ready to play against the 23, 24-year-old seniors that are playing for some of the other teams. So they want to make a change right there. And hey, they already blew up the CCHA, so I'm not surprised by anything that they do these days. And it makes it a little bit tougher for all the rest of us, but we'll live with it. Regardless of what happens, we're going to take our second break on the show tonight. We'll be back with more of the Laker Hockey Show right after this on ESPN 1400. Thank you. Okay, we're back for our third segment of the Laker Hockey Show live from the Antlers on East Portage Avenue. A reminder again, it's not too late to book a holiday party here at the Antlers, and New Year's Eve, they're having a big party here, including dinner. And a prime rib and lobster will be on the menu that night. So call down to the Antlers. Make your reservations for New Year's Eve. Got a couple of more questions from fans here tonight, Damon. One of them involves a subject we already talked about. Three majors in three games. I'm not sure we deserved two of those three to be DQs, but has the league said anything to us about that and the number of majors we're taking?
Well, you know, we have pretty constant conversation with Greg Shepard, as we talked about, you know, on our last road trip to Bemidji. Shep was there, and you know, his words before the game was, "I want my refs on the ice to call it a game misconduct. We can review it afterwards and add the DQ, but you can't take it away." And sure enough, they call the DQ on the ice. So, you know, we got a good relationship with Shep, and again, I don't. It's certainly, I think people who know me and know us and the way we're trying to play, it's not an intent. I get Nenendahl's. I mean, I don't think he initially intended to target the head, but it ended up making contact with the head. So that one you can see. Again, Mitch Holtz, I mean, obviously you want to take care of players and not injure guys, but I didn't think he targeted the head. He didn't get a shoulder up, elbow up, anything like that. I'd be curious if that happened Saturday night, if they would send it in for a review or not. You know, I think it when you're playing the team the next night, you look for any advantage, but that'd been interesting to me. And then Aiden Wright's, I thought, was an extremely weak call. I mean, there was really nothing there. I'm not even sure it's a two-minute penalty. So so there's been nothing further than that. You know, again, we talk to Shep all the time, and you know, I call Shep and say, you know, what did you see, Shep? I want to know. And I was actually, I wanted to appeal the Mitch Holtz decision. You can't do it when it's only one game, but I thought it was not deserving of additional punishment. He missed the third period, and that was plenty. There was no intent to injure. There's no targeting of the head. You can't ask your kid to do much less. He coasted into it, and it was a big, strong kid hitting a kid a little bit smaller than him. And again, the injury came when Chad McDonald went down to the ice. So I don't think they have a problem with the team and the way we're playing, and that's certainly not our intent. You know, we try to play the game the right way, and certainly want to play hard and physical, but we're not out trying to injure any opponents for sure.
Yeah, I think the thing that's really tough about it is the two DQs, the one to Holtz, the one to Nenendahl. Those two guys really have to watch themselves now. And I thought Josh Nenendahl did a really good job Friday night. A couple of times I noticed that he could have really lined somebody up, and he backed off on it. He did a little pushing instead of really hitting somebody. And you're kind of taking away that kid's game if you take hitting out of it.
Well, Josh will be fine. He still had 9 hits that we charted on Saturday night. But you're right. He's doing a better job of reading the situation and letting up. You're right. I mean, he's not able to put in what he usually does. Just that's the adjustment you have to make. And that's kind of college hockey today, good or bad. And again, I understand player safety issue. I had a lot of concussions in my playing time, and I'm sensitive to the issue. But you got to play hard. You got to be prepared to play and play the game the right way. And Josh is doing a better job now of making those reads and not allowing the ref to put calls. He got through, I think, the weekend without anything, I believe. So good adjustment by Josh, but he'll continue to play hard and physical.
Yeah, and that's a good line. You put him out there with those two speedy wingers. You got Corey Ellie on one side and C.J. Hayes, who just flies around the ice on the other side. They go pretty good.
They are. They they skate. They play well. We used that line for the majority of the weekend to match up against the Shemp, the top line for Ferris. And, you got two freshmen doing it, and that's never ideal. I think when you look at most of our lines, we got so many young guys right now up front that you don't get maybe that junior versus junior matchup or the senior versus senior matchup. So I thought they did a really good job. We shortened the bench a little bit on Friday, and then you got the suspension as well. So it changed that a little bit. But I thought they did a good job. You didn't see their top guys show up on the score sheet too often there. And a lot of credit to that line for doing that. And I think coming in through the process, we kind of knew Nenendahl in Youngstown as a captain. When they went into Ann Arbor to play the national program, he was used to match up against the national program's top line or Muskegon, whoever it was. So it's certainly a role we thought he could play at this level. You're never not sure how quickly he can do it, but he's doing a good job of that.
Yeah, he's been a very good freshman player, and he's got 3 goals already this season. I think that's as many as he had last year at the Youngstown.
Well, we hope he's not done. We'll take at least 3 more to finish up here. He's got more ability than he probably got credit for, and that's, I think, part of when we recruit kids. He's not here to just be a checker. We want Josh to score goals, whether they're shorthanded, 5-on-5, whatever it is, and he's gotten some power play time, but we want guys to use their skill and ability. We're not here to just have a third line or a fourth line that can just play defense and sit back. We want those guys involved. That secondary scoring is so important, and early on him and CJ both were doing a lot of that. Now Gus is doing it, so that balance is really a dangerous weapon.
Okay, we're off to Alaska this week. I don't make that trip anymore, but we'll be taking a feed from Bruce Check up there. He's a very capable play-by-play announcer. Those games are at 11:05 on both Friday and Saturday this weekend from Fairbanks. And we've got a question here about what the itinerary would be like there. When do you leave? When do you get back? How does it work?
We will depart Wednesday morning. We have an afternoon flight out of Detroit, so we'll jump on the bus in the morning and book down there to catch that flight, get a little lunch on the way, and I think we arrive about 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. There's no chance to practice on Wednesday, which is a little bit of a disruption. Nothing major. We probably would have looked at a day off today, maybe, had we had Wednesday practice, but with losing that one day already, you want to be careful. You still have a lot of things to put in and accomplish for the week. So we'll do that, and then Thursday up there, we get ice at 6 p.m. their time. So we'll kind of find some different spots in the day to hopefully catch up on some sleep and get acclimated a little bit. And then you skate again Friday morning. So we'll get two skates before our game Friday night on the Olympic sheet. And then there's a red eye post game Saturday. I really haven't looked at the post game too much. You're so worried about, getting there. But post game, we'll let the guys take their time around the arena and, get unwound and stretched out and loosened up. And then we'll get a bite to eat and we'll head back to the airport, jump on a red eye. I think we get back Sunday early evening. So it's a long trip for sure. And, coming into the stretch run with finals and no bye weeks the first half, I probably would have liked to incorporate 1 or 2 more off days over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I think we only got 1 off day in that stretch.
Yeah.
I think part of it, our team, when you talk to our team, they like doing a pregame skate, every day, Friday and Saturday. So we got guys that like it, the touch pucks and loosen up. So we haven't done probably enough off days as maybe we'd hope to. And we'll certainly look to do that once we get home and going into that Michigan Tech weekend.
Yeah, the tough thing is you come off that tough trip, you'll definitely have a Monday off there. Then you got to get ready in a couple of days to play probably the best team in the WCHA this season. I think Michigan Tech's got more veterans returns even than Minnesota State, and they're both right at the top of the standings, and Tech will be coming in here to Sault Ste. Marie that second week in December.
Yeah, tough matchup. I actually watched that game Saturday night till about 2 a.m. watching the end, you know, when the WCHA TV watched the Fairbanks game, partly pre-scouting Fairbanks, partly just kind of checking in on some of the guys there, and they're a good hockey team. You know, talked about that Ferris mobile decor. I think Michigan Tech is very good. They probably have one or two maybe more dynamic guys in Mark Ock and Shane Hanna that can hurt you from the back end, but you know, they're a good team. They're scoring. You know, Alex Patan, the senior, over 100 career points. You know, Jamie Phillips had a phenomenal year last year. He's having a good, very good year again this year. So that's a tough matchup. And I'm interested to, you know, to really see. It's a real good measuring stick for where we're at. We only saw them early last year where we weren't, you know, ready to compete at that level. So I think we're a much better team, and it's going to be fun to play them. And then we get them at Winter Carnival, which will be a great weekend over there as well.
Yeah, we play Michigan Tech four times this year. We make two trips to Alaska this year. You've got to go back up in February to play Anchorage up there. We also play Anchorage here, I think the second week of January they come down here. So a lot of travel here, and that's tough. It takes a lot out of those players when they have to make that the long haul. What kind of team does Alaska have? Dallas Ferguson's a pretty good coach. He's usually got a pretty mobile team.
Yeah, they skate well. They've got that big sheet. You know, I think when you first look at them, you look at the St. Louis Blues and you see Perry Aiko right in the lineup playing major minutes in the NHL right now. So that's a huge loss on their back end. He probably played 30-35 minutes last night or last year for them in Fairbanks. So I think we're all glad we don't have to look up and see that 6'6" or whatever he is, Colton Perry Aiko back there. He was a great player for him. So big loss there in the back end. Tyler Morley, I believe, was the preseason player of the year voted by the coaches or media. So Tyler Morley is one of the best players in our league. You know, he plays hard. He plays fast. He's a nasty, nasty player. You know, if you're not paying attention, he can burn you with skill, or he can burn you with a little bit of lumber or whatever he wants. So he's a guy you have to be very alert to. They got some other skilled guys in Basara, Morley's younger brother, Brandon Morley, another skilled player. So they've got a pretty good forward group. Defensively, you know, with that loss of Perry Aiko, I think they've given up one less goal than Ferris. So they're giving up more than I'm sure Dallas would like to do. They're scoring at a pretty good clip as well. So they balance it out. But I think that's, you know, where we'd like to attack is put some pressure on their D. Jesse Jenks is a freshman goaltender had a very good career in Prince George in the BCHL, and he's kind of looks like he's won that number one job over the last few weeks, and he's got pretty good numbers. He's got good size. You know, Diego spoke a little bit about him today in the locker room to our team because he faced him a ton in Merritt last year, and you know, same thing, he's a big goaltender, very good on the first shot. And, you know, getting trafficked and second chance opportunities would be very important against him again.
Well, it'll be an interesting trip up there, and we'll all be listening in this weekend. You got 2 days this week to decide who makes that trip. You can take 22 players with you, and that'll be tough right there because Gage Terrell's kind of coming off an injury. We're not sure how strong he is at this point. Draplock's definitely out. He will not make the trip. And you got a couple other guys you could take, or you could move some guys around from what you had last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, short week, tough week, you know, being fairly healthy or fully healthy for the most part. You know, you look at the Olympic sheet a little bit there, and you want to have some mobility and some skating ability on that sheet. So that dictates part of it. And there's one or two guys that, you know, I think are playing pretty good hockey right now and maybe deserve to be in the lineup. But then you got to start looking at, you know, maybe it's a face-off specialist that you need, or a power play guy, or a penalty kill guy. So that's starting to play in the equation. Now that we're fully healthy, we're looking at some of the roles and guys playing that we need them in. So if you have two guys that are both playing pretty good, and one guy can be a penalty killer or a face-off guy, it gets tough that way. And it's very hard when you got kids who are deserving to play. But, you know, that's where we're at right now competition-wise. So a couple tough choices, and we'll probably let the team know with no injuries in practice, things like that. We'll have to let them know post-practice tomorrow with the early morning departure so they can pack and prepare and let the professors know.
We've got another interesting event coming up in the future, too. We haven't really talked much about it. The Vermont Christmas Tournament coming up on the Tuesday and Wednesday following the Christmas holiday. That's a tough trip to get everybody together and get out there and then get back to. There's a lot of stuff going on. You got a bus going out of Detroit with the Detroit area kids and the Americans and yourself on it. And then we're going to drive a truck down there with the equipment on it to Toronto, have a practice at St. Mike's there and then go into Vermont. That's about a 6-hour drive right there.
Yeah, the logistics, learning a holiday tournament is not the most enjoyable to plan. Florida last year trying to book, 28 people flying at the holidays was not the easiest. So, we'll try to make it easy for our players. Figured that if we can meet in Detroit and Toronto, our international, our Canadian kids won't have to fly internationally. It'll save them some money. So we'll meet up in the afternoon in Detroit, bus, as you mentioned, to Toronto, practice up there late the Boxing Day or the 26th of December. I give everybody lots of time to travel in. I think typically, most places I've been, there's always one or two guys that have some weather and travel issues that might miss that, and then we'll wake up the next morning and probably plan on driving 4 or 5 hours, getting up the bus and practicing in one of the OJHL rinks or maybe the CCHL rinks, and then continue on to Vermont. So I think once we get there, it'll be nice. We'll be kind of centered in. I've never been out to Burlington. I know it's a great setup, and it'll be a nice tournament that way. But planning that and the logistics gets a little interesting.
Yeah, one of the other tough things is everybody's got to go. You got to take them all. You're not going to, because they can't go unless they stay home. They can't come back to campus.
Yeah, last year we didn't take everybody, and you do have the option to do it. And then you look at hotel rooms and room on the bus and things like that. So we've got to put a little more time on that and decide, how you travel and do that. And, you end up stuffing 28 kids on the bus and your staff. Yeah. It makes the travel a little bit difficult. So we'll spend some time on that and make some decisions. Bill, before I forget, I wanted to mention today is, anybody listening, the last day of our Movember promotion. If you go to our Facebook page, it's the last day to vote for any facial hair you like on our players, which I hate facial hair, and I can't wait till the guys all have to shave tomorrow. But I think it's $1 per vote. We're trying to raise money for the Stand for Ciotti. I believe we got two or three guys. I think Matt McCardle might be leading right now. So anybody wants to vote at some ugly look guys with some bad facial hair, you can do that, and it's going to a great cause to help the Ciotti family out with their medical bills. I got to do it. I'm going to hopefully remember to get home tonight, and I got to figure out who I want to vote for and try to rig this thing, and we'll get a little prize for the winner of it. But there'll be a lot of razors at the rink tomorrow, and we'll start looking a little bit classier come tomorrow post-practice.
All right. Sounds good to me. I think McCardle looks great, though. I think he should just leave it like that the rest of
maybe
his
that'll
career.
Be the award. The winner can keep growing it for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's good.
It looks like Brent Burns in San Jose. I don't know if anybody's watched Brent Burns, but looks like a caveman on the ice.
All right. We're going to take a break here. It's our last break of the show. We'll come back. We'll talk recruiting, among other things. We'll be right back with more on the Laker Hockey Show on ESPN 1400. All righty, we're back for our final segment tonight at the Antlers. Bill Crawford along with the head coach of the Lakers, Damon Whitten. And I know this is a hockey show, but I want to remind everybody and let everybody know that the Laker basketball teams are at home this week, Thursday night and Saturday afternoon. Findlay on Thursday and Wayne State this Saturday. So get out and support the Laker basketball teams too. And I know Damon would pass that on if he thought of it as well. The staff, it's one thing, we've got pretty good staff there. I know you have quite a few staff meetings, and all the coaching staffs get along pretty well. We've got we kind of share Tyler's services with strength training, etc., but everybody gets along well.
Yeah, no question about it. And for me, the hard part is having the young kid. 7 o'clock is so late these days for us, so I don't get many basketball games, but I enjoy going. I mean, the job Steve's done there, and I know what Kristen's trying to build, so they're a fun product to watch. And we don't always line up a whole lot to watch their games, so we got to watch a couple of volleyball games, and we shared home weekend. So for us, we never get there enough, but hopefully they'll get a couple big wins. I spent some time at Wayne State, so I'm looking for the Lakers to put one to the Warriors down there.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other things involving this hockey team. I want to get into recruiting in a second. We talk about that every week, but injury report at this point, I think. Probably Eric Draplock's the one guy still out of the lineup due to injury.
Yeah, no red jerseys in practice. Everybody's fully cleared and ready to roll for the most part. Draplock's not even back on the ice yet, so he's still, you're probably talking post-Christmas. And then, then we got to get him back in game shape. He's obviously on the bike and doing things as much as he can. We'll get Draps back. Obviously, you're going to add back a very experienced defenseman who's played a ton of college hockey. So, it's frustrating. You want him back and his leadership around, and I know he's having a little bit of a hard time as a senior. You want to be helping your team and in the lineup. So we'll be excited to get him back in a few weeks.
All right, recruiting. I noticed a couple young guys in there this weekend. You've got you're working on futures, I would think, at this point. And we can't mention names or where anybody's from or anything, but I've been impressed by the recruiting that Rich Mitro and Pete Aubrey last year and Doug Holivar are doing this year. It looks really good to me for the future.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think they've done a great job. And those of you who know them, you know, their personalities are built for recruiting and building relationships. And so, you know, Rich and Doug have done a good job there. They're you know, very active. Doug will hit the road. He's not going to travel with us. He's going to be back out again. And, you know, it's great timing for him to continue to kind of build his relationships. His coaching is very good, and his recruiting eye and ability is very good, and he works, you know, Rich same way. I mean, Rich works so hard at it, and you know, we had, like as you mentioned, a couple guys in, and those went well. I mean, people, once again, they come in and see the town and see the facilities and see the passion for the program, and it's an easy sell at that point. So yeah, it was a good weekend, a productive weekend that way as well. And you know, you always kind of you try to obviously showcase what you're going, and so we knew Thanksgiving weekend, you know, your students are gone and a lot of people are traveling, so it's a little bit tough sometimes bring them in for Thanksgiving games. But they enjoyed it, they enjoyed the style of play, and you know, we'll see where those develop with those two kids who came in.
I would think Saturday night, that third period, that'd be pretty exciting for a recruit to watch. That there wasn't a huge crowd there by any means, but they made a lot of noise in that third period, and it was exciting. It was a comeback game and the home team won.
Yeah, well, you know, exactly. You prepare kids for what they're trying to see. You talk about style of play and opportunity and role. So, but certainly at the end of the night, when you can go upstairs after a good win and the comeback and the energy, I mean, that makes all the difference in the world. And then depending on their age and where they're from, they might have a chance to spend some time with the team. And they're your best recruiters. I mean, if your players, you know, aren't able to build relationships or show the kids that you know, they're enjoying it, that they believe, it's tough to get kids. So the more time we can have recruits spend with our players, and we think the better off that is for our program. So we try to really rely on them. Now, when you're going young and you have some young kids, it gets tough because of some of the age differences. And certainly a Saturday night for a younger kid is not an opportunity to probably spend with our college kids. But we certainly want them with them as much as we can to sell our program.
Yeah, and one of the other things that happened on the weekend, you had to curtail your post-game talk with me because you had to run out and help the boys ring the victory bell. You know, we talked before about this. It's probably one of the greatest traditions in college hockey, if not the number one tradition, ringing that bell.
I got to believe it's number one. I mean, it's amazing. And, you know, that's, we got to win our home games. We got recruits in to see that. And I remember the first time last year, the snow coming down and people. So I've missed most of them because, you know, doing radio or grabbing some kids or whatever. So I didn't want to miss it. It was such a big win for our team coming back down 2-0. You know, we could have packed it in. We, you know, could have not got it done. But our guys were so excited. The mood was great. And, you know, so I wanted to see our kids in that environment and see the fans and thank the fans. So, you know, so I apologize for cutting it short, but I didn't want to miss that. And I'm glad I got out there for it and just to see the kids enjoy that. And it really is special. But that tradition, you know, like I said, I'm not sure some of the other ones, what they do post game, but I can't believe there's anything better in college hockey than that. It's simply amazing.
Yeah. It's definitely a tradition. I know the players really like it. I've talked to a number of the guys. They think it's just great to run out there and go through that line. It's something to look forward to. That's why they want to win at home.
It's not as special without the snow. I hate to jinx us all and everything like that, but it just didn't feel quite as right without the snow. So, you know, my wife's ready for it. I'm not sure I'm ready for it, but it, you know, you go out there in the snow banks and the snow. I thought last year it was just amazing, and it's really cool. It's something really special. I want to get some really good video of it and get it out to you know, our fans and recruits and really do a good job. So at some point, hopefully, we'll do some footage and document that a little bit more. And I know there is some out there at some places as well.
Yeah, it's today was so nice. I mean, it's incredible. I love this weather we're having. No wind today, just a great day in Sault Ste. Marie with no snow. I don't care if it doesn't snow all winter myself. So we could have played golf today if we'd have had a course that's open in the area. But I want to remind everybody again about this being the last day for the Movember deal. Get online, get on the Laker website, and vote for your favorite player there. Any money that's made there is going toward helping Jean Ciotti out in her tough situation. And we haven't really talked in detail about that, but Mrs. Ciotti is struggling with a battle with cancer right now. We're trying to help out there too.
Yeah, so you know, if anybody has the ability, you know, coming in the holiday season, it's tough. But our players, you know, put this on by themselves, and you know, proud of them for trying to help out and do that. So if you get a chance, do that. I don't want to dodge question number six. Somebody said it's not a question. We didn't look very good on our 5-on-3, so it's not a question. But that falls on me. You know, part of what it was, we had one group that was more prepared for it. But they were on the ice for about, I think it was about 40 seconds or maybe 50 seconds. I thought they were tired. And then the group I had coming out, that's the group I worked with, was missing personnel with Terrell and Holtz out. So we, you know, it was a new group, and you know, in practice you don't get a ton of time to do it, but that fell squarely on me. I thought we were about to execute it pretty well, and then one of the new pieces didn't quite know. He hadn't repped it out. Again, that falls on coaches there, and falls on me because Rich's group was ready, but I just thought they were fatigued. So that falls squarely on me, and I thought it would have been a huge goal to get one there. So bad coaching on that part for sure.
Yeah, and also we've got an announcement here we just got from the foundation office. Believe in Blue Day is tomorrow. Check the website, go on lssu.edu, and check into what that's all about. There's a link there. You can find out what Believe in Blue Day is all about tomorrow. We're out of time here tonight. Mark St. Angelo did a great job filling in for Frank Blissett back at the station. We appreciate that. Carl Mason's here with us at the Antlers. For Damon Witten and for all these great fans who are with us, Bill Crawford, so long till next Monday night on the Laker Hockey Show.